Okay, so to take a little bit further, the issues of Mila and the role that it plays in Garrus. And yesterday we tried to lay out what seems to be the conceptual questions, and we highlighted what some of the issues Lamaisa would be that would connect to those questions. So today let's try to explore those issues in a little bit more detail. Essentially, what we saw is that the two parts of the Garrus that we're focused on right now, as we called it yesterday, 3-1 with another one to be added later. So we are left right now to focus on Tevila and Mila. And we know from the Gemara that we need both. We need Mila, at least if we're dealing with a male, and we need Tevila. And even though there was an opinion in the Gemara that, at least b'di'eved, you could have one without the other, but la halacha we paskin, the first din in Hilchos Garrus in the Shulchan Aruch, that we need both Mila and Tevila. And we also saw that there's an order to it, and that the Mila has to come before the Tevila, even though it's slightly counterintuitive. You could have thought it'd be more efficient, especially if we are interested in expedience, to do things the other way around, and have the Tevila first, so it wouldn't have to wait for the Mila to be healed. But no, we do the Mila first. And whether that's ma'akiv or not, we saw yesterday was a machlokis rishonim, and that it was impacted by the question of how do the parts relate to each other, and that some of the rishonim, in discussing this, made that the issue, and prominently the Ritva and a number of others made this the issue, that they have the attitude that to have the Mila afterwards, to have the Tefila first, would constitute Tovel v'sharetz biyado, that until the Mila is taken care of, you can't really have an effective Tefila, because the person is not ready to be Jewish, whether it's specific to Orla, as it sounds like from the Ritva and those other Rishonim, or whether maybe it's about an overall status of non-Jewishness, that you're not ready yet to embrace Judaism. There's something lacking, and the Tevila, which sounds like from that is the real Garrus, is not yet ready to happen. While there were others, prominently the Ramban, who did not think that it was so crucial the order to have it one way or another, and they brought a proof, which will be relevant in a later sugya. And accordingly, the Ramban basically says it could be one or the other. You could do either one. And l'chanchila, we have the Mila before the Tefila, but essentially, they're basically interchangeable. And the way he explains it, technically speaking, says, why is it that we have the Mila first, l'chanchila? Says, because the Mila is more painful. The Mila is the harder part of the process, and if he's going to get scared away, so let him get scared away now before going any further. But to have the tefillah first and then have him get scared away afterwards, so that's not such a great idea. So let him get clarified as far as his commitment earlier on. But that's essentially a svara l'chadchila. That's not a defining element of how Garrus works. And that's basically his position, that it could go either way. And as we noted, that seems to tie into a larger question of, is Mila really part of the Garrus? Or is it a prerequisite for the Garrus? And the Tevila is essentially the Garrus. So the Ramban's language, saying it go either way, it sounds like essentially they're both parts of the Garrus. Now, this also is going to reflect on where Tevila fits in, because the language of these Rishonim essentially focusing on Tevila as the completion of the process, and really the process itself, is significant. It's interesting to note that there are different approaches to this. The Smag quotes as a source for Tevila, as for immersion in the mikveh in general, as a process of abandoning of Avodah Zarah. And in Parshas Vayishlach, so he comments on this pasuk, that Yaakov says to his children after the whole episode with Shechem to separate from whatever idolatry you may have come in contact with, and you should purify yourselves. And Smag comments that we see from here that one who leaves Avodah Zarah needs a purification process, i.e. Tvila. So the Torah Tamima on that pasuk in Parshas Vayishlach, he suggests over there, says that that is a proof for the position of the Ramban. It's the Ramban who says it doesn't really matter the order. So he says that's because you see that Tvila, according to this Smag, Tvila is not really the Geirus itself. It's about separating yourself from the idolatry. And therefore, it's not really the crucial defining part of the process, and it could happen the other way around also. So it's just interesting, some of the subjectivity that can come into those interpretations, that there are other ways of looking at it also. My good friend Rabbi David Gottlieb has in a sefer, Ateres Yaakov, he has an essay about Mila Begeris, and he notes that the language of the Rashba, which essentially takes the same position as the Ritva and others, that the order is crucial, but he phrases it with a different emphasis. And he phrases it not so much that the Mila has to happen before, but that the Tvila has to happen at the end. But his language in saying that also sounds like it's because that's what cleans you away from the Avodah Zarah, so that has to be the end of the process. So the language is not so different than the Smag, but the Torah Tamima read that Smag to be saying, okay, therefore it's not really the Geirus process, it's just a way of disconnecting from the Avodah Zarah, and that's why the order is not so crucial. But the same language within the Rashba is giving us the conclusion that the order is important, that this is the final disconnect from idolatry, and therefore that's the transition, and it needs to happen at the end. Okay, so one way or another, we have this machlokes, and we saw that in the first Sif in Shulchan Aruch, we saw yesterday that it's brought by the Rama as a machlokes, which would presumably mean that if the Shaila ever comes up, you have here a suffix, and that would require doing things again in order to address the suffix. There is a tshuva in the Leiv Aryeh. The Leiv Aryeh was dying grossness of the London Beis Din. He has it, we'll mention him probably more than once today, but he has a tshuva where he talks about a situation of a boy who was married to a Jewish man and a non-Jewish woman, meaning, so therefore, he was not Jewish, and they did a process of Geirus, and they had a Mila, and then they had a Tvila, and then later on, it was noticed that he was a Mashuch, as the Gemara talks about. Mashuch, Nimshuch, or Arlaso is a situation which was on today's list. The Gemara is to talk about that you have a Mila, but the body is developed in such a way that it's become obscured. It looks as if there's still an Orla there. It looks as if there isn't a Mila. So there, that creates an issue mid Rabbanan, it sounds like from the Gemara, that there is a need to address that, even though there's already been a Bris Mila. That's an obligation mid Rabbanan. So the Tshuva Slave Aryeh has a whole discussion. What does that mean? Does it mean it's a concern of Maris Ayin? It's going to look like there's no Mila? Or is this individual an Arel Midrabanan? But it seems like either way, the fact that he doesn't require a Bris Minatorah, let's say a Jewish baby who's in this situation doesn't require Bris Minatorah, because since he had a halachic Bris, that takes care of it, and even if it's somewhat undone later, it doesn't actually require on a Torah level another Bris. But he wonders, and he concludes a little bit differently, but he wonders in the course of that discussion, that maybe, okay, that's true by a Jewish baby where it's just the mitzvah of Mila. So min haTorah that was fulfilled, any obligation to make sure it looks like it was fulfilled is an obligation midrabanan. But maybe when it comes to the process of Geirus, so it's a greater severity that's put on it. That has to be there in place for the Geirus to be effective. And if there's any kind of an Orla, even maybe an Orla Derabanan, maybe that might create a problem as far as the Geirus is concerned. especially if we're assuming that it has to be in order, that there has to be Mila first and then Geirus. So he considers that based on a comment of the Taz, where the Taz tries to figure out exactly what the status is of Nim Shachar Lasso. And ultimately, he concludes it's all going to depend on how reliable the Mila of the Geirus was. But the consideration that it may be viewed differently than a Jewish baby having a mitzvah of Mila is an interesting discussion. Okay, so that's as far as this issue of the order of the Mila and Tefillah. One issue that would also be affected, we laid out a couple of issues yesterday, is the question of what would be the obligation of somebody who is a male but isn't shaykh now to the mitzvah of Mila. We saw that, we know that a woman who converts doesn't have to have Mila or anything parallel to it. All she needs is tefillah. And we discussed yesterday that it's conceptually an interesting question that if Mila really is a significant affirmative part of the process, then what represents that when dealing with a female? As opposed to if we say that it's just getting rid of the problem of Orla, so then, okay, the female doesn't have the problem, so there's nothing to address. So what if you have a male who doesn't have this issue, which could come up in a number of ways? Right, let's say he was nolad mahol, he was born without an orla. Or let's say that in his non-Jewish life he was circumcised, a very common situation, certainly among the Arab community, as the Gemara already talks about, so that would have been the case. But also nowadays it's a widespread practice to circumcise non-Jewish babies as well. So let's say you have somebody who was already circumcised from before. Or let's say you have somebody who's physically damaged, the nichras agid, and it's not possible to have Mila. So what is the din in all those situations? Which would go to the question of, is Mila an affirmative necessary part? We got to figure out something to replace it if it's not shaykh. Or is it just about removing Orla? Whether that's technical or halachic is also maybe a possible distinction. So let's say, for example, with a baby who was circumcised as a non-Jewish baby, doesn't have the physicality of the Orla, but maybe doesn't have the halachic status of a mahul either. So what's the story for all of these people? So this was a big machlokes rishonim. And that's what the Torah starts off with. The very first lines of the Torah in Hilchos Geirus is to get involved in this Machlokes Rishonim. And there is a strikingly machmir view. The most machmir view is one that hasn't been alluded to yet. That is Rabbeinu Tam. Some of the Rishonim quote Rabbeinu Tam that such an individual has no takana. You can't convert such a person. And he'll go through the tefillah, and it'll have an impact for his children. His children could be full Jews, but he doesn't have the opportunity to fully convert because of this lack of possibility of Mila. That's a pretty striking chumrah. It's also not really clear what this next generation advantage is. As the Taz, on the side of the page in the Shulchan Aruch, in the very first comment in the Shulchan Aruch, in Reish Lamaches, he writes, Mimanav Shach, he says, many tried to figure out this position of Rabbeinu Tam, because what's the situation of this man, let's say? So if he's married to a Jewish woman, so his children are going to be full Jews, whether or not he had this issue. And if he marries a non-Jewish woman, so then he's no better than a born Jewish man. His children will also not be Jewish if they come from a non-Jewish woman. So it's all going to depend on who the mother is, one way or another. So what is this advantage that somehow, even though he can't fully convert, but his children will get the advantage of the process he went through? So they work to try to figure out exactly what that part is. But that's a consolation prize. The main issue, according to Rabbeinu Tam, is that there isn't anything he can do. And that's a pretty big chumrah. So that's not the way the other Rishonim understand. And many of the other Rishonim maintain that, no, there is something you could do, and that is Hatafas Dambris. You can draw a little bit of blood, and that's what's going to replace the process of Mila. Now, that is a relative chumrah, too. It's nowhere near the chumrah of Rabbeinu Tam. I mean, it's painful, so it's a chumrah on that side. But it's a relative chumrah because you could say it's not necessary at all. You could say that the halacha is like a nekeva, and just like a nekeva isn't shaykh for a bris, so too. So somebody who doesn't have the issue or the physical reality or the halachic issue of mila, of arelus, is also in the same status. So Rabbeinu Tam didn't want to say that, because says even if that's true by, let's say, a nolad mohol, or if somebody was born without an orla, so fine, so it's impossible. But maybe there's a distinction between that and somebody who had a bris as a non-Jew. So ein donin efshar mishi efshar. So we can't derive a situation where it was physically possible. You would need advanced planning to anticipate it, but at least physically possible. That is not comparable to a situation like in the Keva, where it was actually physically impossible. So that's a part of the machlokas, and that's where there is a whole distinction as far as this is concerned. La halacha, so what does it say in the Shulchan Aruch? So in the Shulchan Aruch, so it mentions various distinctions. So in the Shulchan Aruch, talks about Nolad Mohol, and the Ramah adds in somebody who was previously circumcised. So apparently linking them together, even though some Rishonim drew a distinction. And L'Halacha, it says, we do a Hatafas Dambris. That in all these situations, we do a Hatafas Dambris. If the baby, if the individual, if the adult now is converting, if it's a situation of Nichras Hagid, if it's impossible, so then that's treated like a Nekeva, so then there can be conversion without that. But if it's a situation of somebody who was born circumcised or had a previous circumcision, so then we say we do a Hatafas Dambris. But there's no bracha on that. And as the Nosei Kalim explain, because it's a suffik, that essentially we see this is a machlokas rishonim, whether this is necessary or not. So it's not clear that this really has to be done. So we do it l'chumra, but there's no bracha on that. So far, so good. Now, it's interesting, just to keep the lumdus straight here, to go back to the question of the order of the mila and tefillah. So we saw that the Ramban was the one who said the order is not so important, seemingly holding that you need to have both, but they could be in either order. And that's l'shitaso here, because you see the Ramban and the Melchamos and Shabbos were almost aligned, synchronized with the Daf Yomi. In a few days, by next week, we would have been up to Kuf Lamed Hey and Daf Yomi. So that's where the Gemara gets into this whole thing. It's in talking about Nyanei Mila right now in Daf Yomi. So by a few days from now, we'll be up to Kuf Lamed Hey. It's where the Gemara talks about these issues of Nolad Mol and Mashach and the like. So the Ramban and the Melchamos there says that the baby is going to, or the ger is going to have a Hatafas Dambris, because if he doesn't, so how is he going to enter in to the Shechina? Apparently understanding that the Mila represents a stage of the Geras, which would work out L'Shitaso in Yevamos, essentially. That it's the same idea, the same way he's saying that they could be in either order, because Mila and Tefillah are both parts of the process, they're not just prerequisites. So here also, he's saying that you need to have something to represent the Mila. So if he's not going to have an actual Mila to enter into the Shechina, so then he has to have the Hatafas Dambris, at least. So the Ramban is Chorul L'Shitaso, that would seem to be consistent. Now the Rambam, it's interesting, because the Rambam is understood to be in league with the Ritva and Tosfos and others, that the order is crucial. You have to have Mila before the Tvila, because the Mila is not the Geiris. It's a prerequisite. But here on these issues, the Rambam does require Hatafis Dambres. So that poses some question. Why is it that you would need Hatafis Dambres if the Mila is not really a part of the Geiris? So some of the Achronim understand, the Ragachavar and the Klichemda, if you look in Rabbi Gottlieb Sefer, he has a discussion about this from a different angle also. But if you look at the Ragachavar and others, so they understand the Rambam is saying this because of the mitzvah of Mila. That if we assume that Mila has to have some kind of a maisa to it, so if this individual never had a maisa Mila as a mitzvah, so therefore he's going to have the Hatafas Dambris for that reason. But it could be that it's not necessarily a part of the Geiris itself. That it's coming from a different direction. Okay. So far, so good. Makes sense. So this could also impact other issues, such as what do we need a Beis Din for? Does the Beis Din have to be present for the Mila? Or just for the Tefillah? So that is going to connect to some issues we'll talk about down the line. We have to try to understand what the role of Beis Din is, specifically what's the Beis Din there for in the first place. But that will come out from that direction when we get up to Beis Din. But here, let's assume, for simplicity's sake, that we need a Beis Din for Geiris. Beis Din has to witness the Geiris. So does the Beis Din have to witness the Bris Mila? Or just the Tevilah? So here again, it seems like you have a Machlokas Rishonim, and it could also work out Lashitasam, that the Rambam, language of the Rambam, seems to suggest that you don't need a Beis Din for the Mila. That the Mila doesn't have to be in the presence of the Beis Din. And that would work out, so far still consistent. Because if the Mila is not really a part of the Geiris, it's a prerequisite for the Geiris, so that it makes sense, okay, the Beis Din doesn't have to witness that. But the Ramban says, at least l'chadchila, you need the Beis Din for the Tevilah and for the Mila. And once again, that also seems to work out l'shitaso. If you understand that these are both parts of the Geiris process, so then it makes sense that the Beis Din should be involved in both. Now, it could be, again, something we'll get into more, that maybe l'ikuva, we don't really need the Beis Din for either. That maybe the Beis Din is only necessary for Kabbalas HaMitzvos. And that's going to get into the whole question of what is Geiris and what is Beis Din, and what exactly is Beis Din there for. But assuming, which is not such a rock-solid assumption, but assuming that it needs to be there for the Tevila, so where does the Mila relate to that? Is it Mila just as much as the Tevila, or not at all? So that may also line up with what we've seen so far. And if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, so again, like a lot of these issues we've seen so far, so the Shulchan Aruch brings this as a machlokes, and therefore subject to l'charchilas and b'diavits. That l'charchila, we should have the Beis Din there for both the Mila and for the Tevila. But the b'diavit, it's possible that it's kosher even without the Beis Din being there for either. If I read, I have the little Shulchan Aruch here. If you want to see the language, so the language in Reish Samaches Gimel in the Shulchan Aruch is Kol Inyanei Hager Bein Lahodiyu HaMitzvos LeKablan Bein HaMila Bein HaTvila Tzarech Shiyu BeGimel HaKsherim Ladin Uvayom. So it needs to be subject to the requirements of Din, being that it should be in front of the Beis Din and also should be during the daytime.
But then Shulchan Aruch goes on to say, Mihu davach lechachila, aval b'diavad im lo mal, o tavo, ela b'fnei beis, uvalayla, afil lo tavo l'shem geiris, etc., etc. So it goes on to say that there's a lechachila b'diavad there, even by the tefila, but as far as the lechachila is concerned, so we want to have everything done in front of the Beis Din. Elliot?
Do we with Chatzchila say that should be the same basin for to witness both the Mila and the Tevila?
So that's an interesting question also. It's also going to get into the definition of what the Beis Din is functioning for. So that will also save for the Beis Din discussion. So trying to separate it out, here we'll just focus on whether the Mila and the Tevila have an equal role here, and that's a question, a good question we'll get to in the Beis Din context. Okay, so that would also seem to reflect this issue, and it also affects the nighttime question and whether these different components have to happen during the daytime, because that's also a part of din. Now, opening up that question for Bris Mila is also interesting, because when it comes to Bris Mila, so a Mila of a baby has to be during the daytime. So to even consider that the Mila of Geiris wouldn't have to be at the daytime is differentiating it between the mitzvah of Mila for a baby and the Mila for a Geiris. And the question of to what extent are they connected, to what extent are those two different, that's also something that we will get into, God willing, in the near future. So a fascinating aspect to consider, and one that I think we'll just lay out today, and then, God willing, we will go into a little bit more detail tomorrow. It's a complicated and important topic, is the question of a ger shamal v'lo tavo. So what if we have a individual going through the process of gerus, and he's had the Bris Mila, but he hasn't yet had the Tefillah, right? Which, especially because of the way we do it, so we could understand that that's not so uncommon a situation, because if it takes some time, like the Gemara tells us, for the Mila to heal, so then there could be a significant gap between the two. And that gap could often include Shabbos, which is a very practical issue that, as we'll see, makes a difference. So what is the status of a ger shamal v'lo tavo? So this has a lot of implications. And Tyler, you want to comment on that?
Just quickly, how long is the refuah process?
So that's a good question. So we'll have to deal with the practicality. It's at least a few days. Right, so, if you have a gerus during the week, so if you have a mila during the week, so then there's very possibly going to be a Shabbos in between. So, among the questions that come up, for example, I'll mention the Lev Aryeh first, even though he was one of the more recent tshuvas that talk about this, and as we'll see, there's a history that goes back before him, that he happens not to talk about this. I'm just going to mention him first in the more abstract sense. So the Lev Aryeh has a tshuva about this, as do many others. So if you have somebody who's in between the process, in between the steps of the process, and, you know, he's being welcomed into the community, and people are reaching out to the prospective Geri Tzedek, as they should be, so they've been inviting him over. So is that a problem? Because, first of all, what about their wine? So to have this not-yet-Jewish man handling the wine, is that going to create a halachic problem? And let's say you're going to have him over for Shabbos. So is that going to create a problem as far as Shabbos is concerned? Based on the premise, the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that Shabbos is only for Jews, and that a non-Jew is not supposed to keep Shabbos. So if you invite him to your house for Shabbos and you're training everyone to keep Pilchas Shabbos, is that a negative for this individual?
Obviously, who could keep Shabbos.
Sorry?
Obviously, thought we said that you could keep Shabbos if you really take it upon yourself.
Right. So we mentioned that specific category that Bir Halacha talks about. That was a Ger Toshav who's not even looking to be Jewish ever. But let's say when he takes upon his commitment to Zion Mitzvahs Bnei Noach, so the Bir Halacha says he could take on extra things too, including Shabbos. So he says that kind of unique individual, it's an unusual situation. That's not this and not that. It's not a non-Jew and not a Jew. It's somebody who's taking on Bnei Noach plus whatever added details. So it's that's that situation he can keep Shabbos. But let's say somebody who's not Jewish at all, so the Gemara says he shouldn't be keeping Shabbos. So how do you deal with that situation? So the way you could look at it, again, before getting into some of the historical complexities, so the Levaria, just as one example of many who have these discussions, he says, as far as the Yayin issue, so he thinks that's relatively easy to address, because here it's basically Beferish and Poskim, that it says in Shulchan Aruch that to have a non-Jew touching your wine creates problems, and the Shulchan Aruch says that's true even if he's a Ger Toshav, so he's not an Oved Avodah Zarah. And says Beferish, it's true even if he is a Ger Shemal Velo Tavel. So if you just read the Shulchan Aruch, so then it's open and shut. However, you read the Ramah, and you read the Shach, and you read the Grah, and you read the later Svarim, so you see it's not as open and shut. And they all point out that many are Makel by Ger Toshav against what the Shulchan Aruch says. That basically it's an issue about the reality of Avodah Zarah, and if the individual is committed to a system of non-idolatry, so it wouldn't necessarily be true. And as they point out, that a Ger Shemal Velo Taval should be at least like a Ger Toshav, because we saw from the Gemara on day one that they're only going to bring him to the stage of Mila if he's already committed to this whole process. So therefore, somebody who has had the Mila, it must be that he's at least as committed as a Ger Toshav is. So if we're going to be Makel for a Ger Toshav, we should be Makel for the Ger Shemal Velo Tavol also. So as far as that's concerned, it seems like that's the easier path. But what about Shabbos? So is Shabbos an issue? So number of poskim assume, Rav Asher Weiss has a discussion about this also when it's Sefer on Chumash, that this depends, this connects to the question of Talmud Torah. Because Talmud Torah should also be only for Jews, the Gemara says also in Sanhedrin. So what about Ger in process to be learning Torah? Now here, that's tricky, because the Gemara says explicitly that you have to tell him about the outlines of the mitzvos, and you can't take on Judaism without knowing some details, so how exactly are you ever going to have a ger if you can't teach Torah? So it might be there's a distinction between just knowing what you need to know for practicalities and going into Torah in detail. There's some who point to the Marashah that we mentioned already. And we said that Hillel accepted this candidate who wasn't so sincere because he understood him to, Tosva says, he saw that he would be sincere. Right, we talked about this last week. And the Marsha said, well, don't get so excited. He didn't accept him right away. He accepted him to learn first more. So it sounds like even though he's not yet ready, but still you can teach him Torah in the process. So the assumption here is that maybe it's the same question, that can you teach Torah to a ger in anticipation, or potential ger, rather, to a prospective, not yet ger, in the process of learning about what the religion is? And maybe the Shmirah Shabbos is for the same purpose. It's all training. So the Shmirah Shabbos that is there to help one to understand what the religion is about, maybe that should be allowed in the same framework. So that's essentially how he concludes, that it's all an intertwined issue, and that basically Talmud Torah and Shabbos for the purpose of training to understand what Judaism is about. So that's legitimate and that's necessary. And that's not included in this prohibition that we would otherwise find for non-Jews. So that's a relatively short discussion. But the truth is, this was a big historical fight about which there's extensive literature. And it goes back about 170 years ago or so. In the 1800s, there was an incident in Yerushalayim when Rav Shmuel Salant was the Rav of Yerushalayim. And he went away for a little while. He was out of town. And Vashu Lemel was put in charge while he was away. And how things tend to happen, you know, when the rabbi's away, there's some big controversy, and it becomes a whole thing to clean up later. So there was, at that time, a Ger Shomal V'lo Tavo. And again, it's a pretty likely scenario, because if the Mila was in the middle of the week, so let's say it takes a few days, and so therefore they're not going to finish it before Shabbos. So in this Shabbos in between, so he showed up at somebody's house, and Rav Shlomo paskind that he has to be Mechalel Shabbos. That because of this idea that Ben Noach Shashavas Chayiv Misa, so therefore, because he's not yet Jewish, so therefore we have to make sure he does some malacha. And he writes his name. This is this premise, which as we'll see, is highly disputed, but this premise that one might have is the topic of one of my favorite jokes. If you've ever heard this joke about somebody who invites a prospective ger, there's different versions of the joke, and then I actually saw this happen in real life. I think one version of the joke is this guy's chavrusa. He tells him that actually he's been, you thought I was Jewish all this time. I was actually preparing for gerus, and I'm going to finish my gerus today. So his chavrusa asks him, he says, but I've been watching you. You've been a Shomer Shabbos all the time I know you, and if you haven't been Jewish, so you shouldn't be a Shomer Shabbos. So he says, no, I always make sure to do some act of Chil Shabbos. So he says, really, what do you do? So he says, I make sure to always carry something, some Chil Shabbos. So the Chavrusa says to him, but that's not going to help. There's an Eruv here. So the prospective Ger responds, I don't hold from the Eruv. So therefore, it counts as a Chil Shabbos for me. So I actually know somebody who actually did that in real life while he was in this guy was also in the Gerus process, and he went to somebody's house for Shabbos lunch. And the guy asked him, so what do you do about Shabbos? So he says, oh, he reaches into his pocket and he pulls out his keys. And the host said to him, but we have an Eruv here. So I don't hold from the Eruv. So I think there's a lot of levels to that joke. But in any event, that's based on this assumption that he has to be Mechal Shabbos. So that was the view that Rav Shlomo maintained. And it started a huge controversy. And Rav Shmuel Salant, that's what happened when I leave town, so he got involved in this. And a number of others got involved in this. Prominently, the Binyan Sion, Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger, was one of those who was consulted about this question. And he later published his tshuva in the Tshuva's Binyan Sion, and it was published in a journal at the time. That was a whole back and forth. So long before the Levi and others talked about this, there was a whole fight about this. And what we'll see, because we'll expand on this tomorrow a little more, but what we'll see is that there are a number of possible perspectives one could have to this question. Because what the Levi was discussing was coming from a pretty basic perspective. He's saying that, okay, this individual is not Jewish. He hasn't finished the Geirus process. So he's not Jewish. But maybe the fact that he's training to be Jewish and he's learning about it, so that justifies a different attitude towards wine, because that's based on Avodah Zarah, but also a different attitude towards Talmud Torah and towards Shabbos, because when it's coming for the purpose of learning about them becoming Jewish, that's a different attitude towards these things. So that was where the Lev Aryeh was coming from. But we could take a more intense position here and say that it's not just that he's training and looking towards being Jewish, and therefore that should give us a different attitude, but maybe he is Jewish on some level. Maybe the fact that he's had the Mila, maybe that does something status-wise. And here, just to lay out the possibilities that we'll expand upon, there's a couple of nuances. What nuances could you say within this? So you could say that he is a shtickl Jewish, right? And therefore that changes things. Right, so that's one possibility. You could say that maybe he's not Jewish, but he's not an Akum either. And that's a possibility, and that's also going to go to breaking down the Geirus into different parts. And as we'll see, that's how some Achronim understand, that maybe a Geir Shemal V'lo Tavol, so the Mila does something to remove him from the previous status without bringing him into the next status. So he's a little bit in the twilight zone, which is going to be a difficult place to be for other reasons, but as far as this is concerned, maybe that affects this issue of Shabbos and related things. So that's another possibility. Maybe he's not Jewish, but he's not an Akum either. He's somewhere in between. And both of those, or one of those, could lead us to another issue, that maybe we shouldn't focus so much on this somewhat more obscure issue, that maybe there is a Isser of keeping Shabbos if he's not yet Jewish. Maybe we should worry about something else. Maybe we should say that he's chayiv to keep Shabbos. That maybe being in this in-between status actually obligates him in mitzvos to some degree. So maybe we shouldn't be forcing him to be mechal Shabbos. Maybe we should be taking the opposite approach. We should be telling him that this is something that he has to do. So, like I said, all of that very complex, a lot of nuances, and we'll give that, God willing, a fresh slate tomorrow, and we'll try to also get into, time permitting, some of the other Mila issues, such as, are there differences between Milas Geirus and Mila of a baby? And then from there, we'll move on to some, we'll see whether it's tomorrow or the beginning of next week, we'll see how the timing works out, to some of the other issues of Mila, some of the details that come up and some of the questions that could some present themselves. So let's just quickly recap what we spoke about. So looking further into this issue as to what role Mila plays in the Geirus process, is it a prerequisite or is it an equal partner? So we saw that this affects the question of the order of Geirus, how crucial is it? And we talked about how that could also be impacted by how you understand Tevila, and we saw some opposite perspectives on how the understanding of Tevila might affect the question of how the order plays out. And then we talked about the question of if somebody is not shaykh to Mila, even though they're a male, how would that impact things if somebody was nolad mal, or if somebody was circumcised in a non-Jewish state, or if somebody is physically unable to have Mila, nechus agid situation. And we saw this was a machlokas rishonim, with the most extreme position being the Rabbeinu Tam, this person can't convert at all. The in-between chumra position is that they require a hatafas dam bris, and that the Shulchan Aruch concluding that you should have a hatafas dam bris without a bracha, because as Nosi Kalim explained, because it is a safek, and in the situation of nichras agid, the person is treated like a nikeva and can convert without mila. And we noted particularly, we had particular attention throughout to the Rambam and the Ramban as representative of the two tzadim here. And the Ramban says he needs a tafas dam bris because he sees Mila as essentially a partner here also. And without that, where are you going to have the entrance into the Shechina? It was surprising that the Rambam requires hatafas dam bris l'shitaso. And we saw that some of the Achronim understood that's for the mitzvah of Mila. It's from a separate consideration. We talked also about the role of Beis Din, which we don't know yet exactly what Beis Din is doing, but assuming you need Beis Din for the Geirus, so is that for the tefillah, or is that for the milah also? The Rambam seems to say only for the tefillah. The Ramban says l'charchila both, and in Shulchan Aruch we find that it's a machlokas. L'charchila we should have for all of the inyanim, but b'diavad we may not even need it even for the tefillah. And then we talked a little bit also about the issue of nighttime, and then the question of mal v'lo tavol, this big issue of somebody who's in the middle of the process. So how does that affect his status vis-a-vis yayin, vis-a-vis shmir Shabbos and the like? And we saw that one could take it simply as a question of does his training status change these halachas, the approach that the Lev Aryeh took. But then we saw also there's a lot more to it, that this was before, going back into the 1800s, was a major controversy, and that there are other possibilities also, that maybe we should look at him differently because he's maybe a shtickle a Jew, that maybe Mila actually brings him into the status of Judaism even before the tefillah, or at least it separates him from the Akum status and maybe puts him in the twilight zone, but that may have some ramifications, and may even lead one to say one's chayiv in Shemir Shabbos. So God willing, that's what we will pick up tomorrow. Yeah, I wish everyone a wonderful day. Should be healthy and well. And we'll see you, God willing, tomorrow.
Thank you,
Eddie. Thank you.